when you hear a show tune from the Great White Way, does a shiver run through ya? Well, we're giving them to ya. Sing hallelujah and shout hooray. Come on along and listen to Broadway to Main Street.
Always say what you would have him say, but now and then he'll say something wonderful. The thoughtless things he'll do will hurt and worry you. Then all at once he'll do something wonderful. He has a thousand dreams that won't come true. You know that he believes in them, and that's enough. Always go along, defend him when he's wrong, and tell him when he's strong. He is wonderful. He'll always need your love, and so he'll get your love. A man who needs your love can be wonderful.
Something Wonderful Indeed. That was the great Carmen McRae. And Something Wonderful is also the title of a brand new book about Rodgers and Hammerstein that I think will redefine how we view them for at least one, if not several, generations. Hi, this is Larry Maslon, your host of Broadway to Main Street, emanating out of the finally springtime hamlet of Southampton, New York, on 88.3 FM Peconic Public Broadcasting. And I am absolutely thrilled that in the studio today we have the author of this book, Todd S. Purdom, who's been working on this book for how many years, Todd?
About 3 years.
And I think it's been part of your entire life, the music of Rodgers and Hammerstein.
In a very real way, yes, since I was a little boy.
And I can't recommend this book enough. It just came out from Henry Holt Publishers. And if you like Broadway to Main Street, and if you like Main Street to Broadway, one of the only films where Rodgers and Hammerstein actually appeared, I urge you to go out and buy this book. So we are going to go through their repertoire, but talk a little bit about their personalities, Todd, and your journey of finding your way through this. So why you're a very much credited and valued writer for Vanity Fair. You've written on political stories, everything in the American culture. Why did you pick Rodgers and Hammerstein?
Well, my wife knew that this is the subject dear to my heart. I've spent most of my career, as you say, as a political reporter. But I owed my publisher the right of first refusal on another book. I'd written a book about the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And she said, this is really what you care about. So I proposed it. And miraculously, they said yes. I'm really glad they did. I couldn't have foreseen this. But it's proven a great opportunity for not covering politics in recent months, which has been, let's face it, not a happy story.
Right. I would say, from my point of view, the matrix of your book is really about how these two guys work together. In many ways, they were very similar. In many ways, they were very different. You bring out all this in wonderfully personal gradation throughout the book. You write that their collaboration was a conundrum. In what way?
Well, they were very much alike in some ways. They'd both grown up in the same swath of middle-class Jewish Harlem in the day. They both went to Columbia University. Richard Rodgers' father was a doctor, and he'd delivered Oscar Hammerstein's two oldest children. They moved in similar worlds. They knew similar people. Each had had striking success in the theater before they ever came together. But they were very different as personalities. Hammerstein was sort of sentimental, and everyone regarded him as one of the nicest people in show business. Richard Rodgers was prickly, rather difficult. Hammerstein worked slowly. Rodgers worked with lightning speed. Noel Coward once said he could pee melody. But when they got together creatively, they were very much in sync. They didn't ever have a substantive disagreement of any great importance. But I found, to my sort of disappointment, and it's poignant, that each went to his grave not quite sure whether the other really liked him, because their personal relationship was correct, but not close, not warm, not intimate.
Interesting. Not what we'd expect from one of those sort of dopey Hollywood biopics
exactly.
of the 40s and 50s.
Exactly.
Well, you mentioned earlier they had tremendous success before they came together in 1942, 43. Let's hear a little bit of Oscar Hammerstein with Jerome Kern, the two guys who created Showboat and Very Warm for May, and a little bit of Rogers' pucky musical comedy chops from By Jupiter in 1942 with Larry Hart.
My lover is a swine. I have eyes for you to give you dirty looks. I have words that do not come from children's books. There's a trick with a knife I'm learning to do, and everything I've got belongs to you. I've a powerful anesthesia in my fist and the perfect wrist to give your neck a twist. There are hammerlock holds, I've mastered a few, and everything I've got belongs to you. Share for share, share alike, you get struck each time I strike. You for me, me for you, I'll give you plenty of nothing. I'm not yours for better, but for worse. And I've learned to give the well-known witch's curse. I've a terrible tongue, a temper for two, and everything I've got belongs to you. He's a living thing that isn't quite alive. He has brains enough for any child of five. Oh, he isn't too rich in vigor and vim, but everything I've got belongs to him. He's a naughty brat who's never left alone. He has eyes for every skirt except my own. Even under a tree, he grabs for the limb, but everything belongs to him. Something beats in his chest, but it's just a pump at best. I'm for him, he's for him, he gives me plenty of nothing. When I see that funny face, I know something scared his mother 20 years ago. But I'll never let go, he'll never be free till everything he's got belongs to me.
So that was the jaunty musical comedy that Rodgers and Hart delivered for about, I don't know, 18 years into 1942, the war years. And that was sort of their last gasp before Rodgers and Hammerstein teamed up. So talk about how the two men really came together. What were some of their apprehensions collaborating together, and obviously the project that brought them worldwide fame?
Well, it was really the product of a midlife crisis for both men. Hammerstein, as you pointed out, had had great success with Jerome Kern and other composers, but all through the 1930s, he'd had a series of terribly disappointing flops, both on Broadway and in London, along with a really unhappy period in Hollywood. Rodgers had never worked with anybody else except Larry Hart, who was increasingly falling prey to the alcoholism that had plagued him for years, and he became unable and unwilling to work. And he was especially unwilling to work on the project Rodgers wanted to do, which was a proposal from the Theater Guild to make a musical out of their old play, Green Grow the Lilacs.
Right. And the rest, they say, is theatrical history, right? So let us hear the first few bars of the song that I guess was the song heard round the world, Oklahoma. Original cast album, Alfred Drake.
There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. The corn is as high as an elephant's eye, and it looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way. All the cattle are standing like statues. All the cattle are standing like statues. They don't turn their heads when they see me ride by. But a little brown maverick is winking her eye. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way. All the sounds of the earth earth are like music. All the sounds of the earth are like music. The breeze is so busy, don't miss a tree. And old weeping willow is laughing at me. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way. Oh, what a beautiful day.
And the world was never the same. Hi, this is Larry Maslin. I'm here with Todd S. Purdom, who wrote this wonderful, there's no other way to call it, biography of Rodgers and Hammerstein, which has just hit stores, called Something Wonderful. The qualities that the two men brought to their work, we know about Hammerstein's great, shall we say, romantic shows of the 20s and 30s, but you make a strong case that he was a good humorist as well in his lyrics.
Yes, I do think it's a bit of a canard. I mean, his lyrics are sentimental, as we all know, but they're also very funny. I mean, it's harder to write a funnier song than I'm Just a Girl Who Can't Say No, or for that matter, All or Nothing. It's a really great, and in the reprise in which Ado Annie gives Will Parker his own back. So I think Hammerstein had plenty of humor. But what he did have, though, was a real appreciation for the real people and characters that weren't cartoons. So the characters in Showboat were richly rendered. And the same thing is true with the shows he wrote with Richard Rodgers, which is why the stories have survived, unlike those frothy musical comedy plots of the 20s and 30s.
Interesting. Well, let's hear from Carousel, their second work together on stage. Barbara Cook singing, I think, a quite witty character song, the likes of which Rodgers and Hammerstein made famous throughout the world.
Yeah. restless as a willow in a windstorm. I'm as jumpy as a puppet on a string. I'd say that I had spring fever, but I know it isn't spring. I am starry-eyed and vaguely discontented, like a nightingale without a song to sing. Oh, why should I have spring fever when it isn't even spring? I keep wishing I was somewhere else, walking down a strange new street, hearing words that I have never heard from a girl I've yet to meet. I'm as busy as a spider spinning daydreams. I'm as giddy as a baby on a swing. I haven't seen a crocus or a rosebud or a robin on the wing. But I feel so gay in a melancholy way that it might as well be spring. It might as well be spring. Busy as a spider spinning daydreams. I'm as giddy as a baby on a swing. I haven't seen a crocus or a rosebud or a robin on the wing. But I feel so gay in a melancholy way that it might as well be spring. Oh, it might as well be spring.
A film song from the movie State Fair, written by Rodgers and Hammerstein. I'm here with Todd S. Purdom. Todd, their popularity by, what, the mid-1940s wasn't just obviously on the Broadway stage, but in films, recordings, on the radio. Was there anything like that previous to Rodgers and Hammerstein?
No, Irving Berlin had had his own music publishing company, but Rodgers and Hammerstein established their own music publishing company to own the copyrights of their songs from the beginning of Oklahoma. They pioneered with Decca Records the practice of recording original cast albums, not the very first one done, but it was the one that set the pattern for the future. They got involved in movies with State Fair, 20th Century Fox, and Hollywood. Their songs were all over the radio. They were absolutely unavoidable as a pop culture phenomenon in a way that's really hard for us to imagine today any single artist or pair of artists becoming so dominant.
Yes, I'm always reminded that they were on the cover of national magazines. They were had television shows dedicated to them that stopped regular programming.
Exactly.
It's almost impossible to imagine that in the current environment, certainly from a Broadway perspective.
Yes, but this is when Broadway was the world, and Broadway songs were the best-selling albums for weeks at a time, and you know, popular music from Broadway shows was the top 40 of its day.
Well, speaking of which, one of their most popular renderers was one of the most popular singers of the 1950s, Perry Como, who was the first singer to get a crack at their score to Allegro.
We have nothing to remember so far, so far, so far we haven't walked by night and shared the light of a star. So far your heart has never fluttered so near, so near, that my own heart alone could hear it. We haven't gone beyond the very beginning. We've just begun to know how lucky we are. So we have nothing to remember so far. So far. But now I'm face to face with you, and now at last we've met, and now we can look forward to the things we'll never forget. But now I'm face to face with you, and now at last we've met, and now we can look forward to the thing.
I'm here with Todd S. Purdom, the author of Something Wonderful. We talked about their ubiquity in pop culture in the 40s and 50s. I think it's only incumbent upon me to mention that they were in a movie called Main Street to Broadway, which is where we get the title going the other way of our show, Broadway to Main Street. They didn't always have hits, of course. Allegro was not a hit. And they had to redeem themselves with their 1949 entry South Pacific. Can you talk about how they juggled hits and failures? Because their batting average wasn't, 1,000% all the time.
No, I mean, they produced a new show every other year for basically 18 years running. So they weren't always batting, 500. But they were so frustrated with the failure, comparative failure of Allegro, which was an experimental show, that when they bought the rights to James Michener's novel, Tales of the South Pacific, he said they were so frustrated they could have made a good musical out of 3 pages of the Bronx telephone directory. And they were determined to have a hit with South Pacific. They got hooked up with their friend Josh Logan, who was the dominant director on Broadway. It was a rip from the headline story about a war that was fresh in people's minds, and it was the monster smash of all time.
Yeah, and it's ubiquity. We're going to hear a song that is performed by Frank Sinatra. Was easily, probably, certainly the most popular show tune of the 1940s into the 50s, maybe the most popular show tune of all time. But what's interesting, what many listeners don't know, is the wonderful twin soliloquies that leads into it. So here is Sinatra with Keeley Smith from a recording in the 1960s.
Wonder how I'd feel living on a hillside, looking on an ocean beautiful and still.
This is what I need, this is what I've longed for, someone young and smiling climbing up my hill.
We are not alike. Probably I'd bore him. He's a cultured Frenchman. I'm a little hick.
Younger men than I, officers and doctors, probably pursue her. She could have her pick.
Wonder why I feel jittery and jumpy. I'm like a schoolgirl waiting for a dance.
Can I ask her now? I am like a schoolboy. What will be her answer? Do I have a chance? Some enchanted evening, you may see a stranger. You may see a stranger across a crowded room, and somehow you know. You know even then that somewhere you'll see her again and again. Some enchanted evening, someone may be laughing. You may hear her laughing across a crowded room, and night after night, as strange as it seems, the sound of her laughter will sing in your dreams. Who can explain it? Who can tell you why? Fools give you reasons. Wise men never try. Some enchanted evening, when you find your true love, when you feel her call you across a crowded room, then fly to her side and make her your own. For all through your life you may dream all alone. Once you have found her, never let her go. Once you have found her, never let her go.
And what chills run up and down our collective spines. Some Enchanted Evening, of course, Rodgers and Hammerstein, who we're celebrating today with Todd S. Purdom, the author of the fantastic new book, Something Wonderful. Todd, when I refer to Dick and Oscar, I sometimes say that Dick was the curt one and Oscar was the courteous one. They had different personalities and they dealt with the world and their work, I think, in rather different ways. Could you perhaps in a very cheap and quick way delineate some of that for us?
Well, the story goes that when Rogers and Hart were collaborators, and Hart, remember, was not under 5 feet tall or just about 5 feet tall, the rumor went that the little one was nice, but the big one was a son of a bitch. And when he collaborated with Hammerstein, who was over 6 feet tall, the story went the big one was nice, but the little one was a son of a bitch. So Rogers was just—he was a genius, but he was not a warm person in his daily life, as in the way Hammerstein was. He was difficult. He was prickly. We also now know that, quite sadly, he was suffering severe depression and alcoholism for much of his later creative life, especially. So perhaps he can be given a bit of a pass. He was a lecher. He had a girl in every show, strictly a chorus girl. Hammerstein was a devoted family man and much more kind of stay-at-home, in bed by 10 kind of guy.
But not always in his bed, I gather.
No, he at least apparently had one affair of his own with a showgirl who was in Pipe Dream named Temple, Texas. But they were just different personality types, and yet they managed to work together so seamlessly.
Yeah. You have one of my favorite quotes from Ethan Mordden after Richard Halliday, Mary Martin's useless husband, made a suggestion in The Sound of Music, which they rejected. Would you like to recount that?
Well, Halliday wanted Maria to be discovered as she was, in a tree, but when she climbed out of the tree, he wanted her to catch her bloomers on the tree and expose her underwear. And they thought that was a terrible idea. And he stormed out and went down the hall and said, "The trouble with you guys is all you care about is the show." And that was the absolute truth.
Indeed. And I think they took theater and the theater-going audience so personally. And this next song, from not one of their hits, but it's a score I love a lot, Me and Juliet, I think sums up from Hammerstein's point of view what it's like to face an audience night after night.
Because he thought the audience could ultimately never be wrong.
The water in a river is changed every day as it flows from the hills to the sea. But to people on the shore, the river is the same, or at least it appears to be. The audience in a theater is changed every night as a show runs along on its way. But to people on the stage, the audience looks the same every night, every matinee. A big black giant who looks and listens with thousands of eyes and ears. A big black mass of love and pity and troubles and hopes and fears. And every night the mixture's different, although it may look the same. To feel his way with every mixture is part of the actor's game. One night it's a laughing giant, another night a weeping giant. One night it's a coughing giant, another night a sleeping giant. Every night you fight the giant, and maybe if you win, you send him out a nicer giant than he was when he came in. But if he doesn't like you, then all you can do is to pack up your makeup and go. For an actor in a flop, there isn't any choice but to look for another show. That big black giant who looks and listens with thousands of eyes and ears. That big black mass of love and pity and troubles and hopes and fears will sit out there and rule your life for all your
do I love you because you're beautiful? Or are you beautiful because I love you? Am I making believe I see in you a boy too perfect to be really true? Do I want you because you're wonderful? Or are you wonderful because I want you? Are you the sweet invention of a lover's dream? Or are you really as wonderful? Because you're wonderful, or are you wonderful because I want you? Are you the sweet invention of a lover's dream, or are you
in 1955, as Rodgers and Hammerstein were preparing their new project, Pipe Dream, Dick Rodgers auditioned a 19-year-old British actress who was appearing in The Boyfriend. Her name was Julie Andrews, and here she sings one of the most beautiful songs from their 1951 hit, The King and I.
When I think of Tom, I think about a night when the earth smelled of summer, and the sky was streaked with white, and the soft mist of England was sleeping on a hill. I remember this, and I always will. There are new lovers now on the same silent hill, looking on the same blue sea. And I know Tom and I are a part of them all, and they're all a part of Tom and me. Hello, young lovers, whoever you are. and to fly down a street in a trance. You fly down a street on a chance that you'll meet, and you meet not really by chance. Don't cry, young lovers, whatever you do. Don't cry because I'm alone. All of my memories are happy tonight. I've had a love of my
I'm here with Todd S. Burdum, the author of Something Wonderful. And Todd, you begin your book with the very event celebrated in that rendition by Jerry Southern of Rodgers and Hammerstein's television Cinderella.
Yes, it was an unbelievable thing. A live broadcast, March 31st, 1957, the 14th anniversary of Oklahoma. It starred Julie Andrews. It drew an audience of 107 million people at a time when the population of the country was about 172 million. It was really an extraordinary, it was the most watched event in the history of the planet to that point. So that gives you a sense of how Rodgers and Hammerstein dominated things.
And at the same time, they were working on a new Broadway musical, Flower Drum Song.
Exactly.
We've discussed this a little bit. I've sort of said that I think of all their scores rather perversely. It's the one I enjoy listening to the most because I think it's so diverse. Do you think it's a kind of unsung gem in their canon? Or how would you place Flower Drum Song?
Well, let's say that you gave me a renewed appreciation for it. I didn't really know this show very well until I started the book. And after you told me it was your favorite score, I listened to it closely. And there are some absolutely beautiful numbers in it. And they're very... A wide variety of numbers, because some are sung by the Chinese characters in a kind of oriental idiom, some are sung by the snappy Americanized Chinese people in a very 1950s, you know, swingy. And then there are some nightclub songs that are pastiche songs in the form of a kind of... So it's a very creative score, and it turned out to be what Oscar Hammerstein called a lucky hit.
Hmm. Well, here is Leslie Odom Jr., hot off of Hamilton, singing from that very score.
Set me free. Look away.
the music of Rodgers and Hammerstein as contemporary and as timeless as the day it was written. Todd, I'm going to ask you the question that they always ask me whenever I'm interviewed about something I've written. What surprised you the most as you were researching the story of Rodgers and Hammerstein?
I guess it really was to learn that their personal relationship was somewhat fraught and that they each died not sure the other had liked him. But they suppressed it and they made it a unified front to the world for all those 18 years together. They knew they had a good thing going. Mm-hmm. They weren't going to mess it up. Robert Russell Bennett, their frequent orchestrator, said he'd seen them cry, but only with joy at the first performance of South Pacific. So they looked on the bright side whenever possible, I think.
I think one of the magical miracles of their work together is they were each pioneers in their own way before they met. So I wouldn't say the whole was necessarily greater than the sum of its parts, but they were definitely each destined for greatness and innovation. And when they worked together, their skill at innovation was sort of increased by the other guy. I guess it's that thing you always play tennis better with a better player than you.
I do think there was a catalytic effect when they came together, and they each were perfectly prepared to team up with each other so that when they met, it was an explosion, and then we're still feeling the reverberations.
The story of their collaboration ends on a somewhat melancholy note, perhaps with their biggest hit, The Sound of Music, which you point out was probably the most successful theater score of all time if you fold in the immense success of the 1965 movie. So perhaps you could tell us a little bit about the end of their collaboration and how it led into the final song we're going to listen to.
Well, as they were working on The Sound of Music, Oscar Hammerstein thought he might have had an ulcer, and it turned out he had stomach cancer, and it was the cancer that was going to kill him. So he missed the New Haven out-of-town tryout, and he joined the show when it was in Boston. And by that point, they felt they needed another song, a song for Captain Von Trapp to sing in the second act. And since the original captain was Theo Bakel, who happened to be an excellent folk singer and guitarist, Rodgers had written a kind of a tune that sounded a little bit like what he hoped would sound like an Austrian folk tune. And Oscar came up to Boston, and in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel, working with Dick, he wrote the last lyrics of the last song he ever wrote, which was Edelweiss.
I'm always so moved by the fact that when they got together in 1943 for Oklahoma and they were out of town in Boston, the producer from the Theater Guild said, "Oscar, I need a song, something about the land." And he wrote Oklahoma. And the last song he wrote was also about the land and about home and about country, something he understood deeply.
Yes, and one of the original draft lyrics was, "Look to your lover and hold him tight while your health you're keeping." And he must have been thinking, obviously, about his own mortality. So it does end on a kind of a poignant note. And the critical reception was lousy on Broadway for most critics, but it was a super hit and then an even bigger hit as a movie.
Well, we talked about Oscar Hammerstein's mortality, but your new book, Something Wonderful, has renewed the immortality of the team of Rodgers and Hammerstein. And congratulations on a great book, and thank you for contributing that to our volume of literature about them.
Thanks so much for having me, Larry.
All right. Who better to take us out than Audra McDonald?
Bless my homeland for Well, where is the time all gone to? This is Larry Maslon here at Broadway to Main Street. Let's catch up next Sunday at 3.
There's so much more embracing still to be done, but time is racing. Oh, well, we'll catch up some other time.